If you're in the process of writing a book, or you've just sold your book to a publisher, or maybe you're just curious about how a book gets published and promoted, this in-depth segment is for you. Our guest is Courtney Malm, author of Before and After the Book Deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book, out now from Catapult Press. Courtney's book guides writers through such topics as making time to write, setting goals, the pros and cons of getting an MFA, and submitting your work to editors, agents, and contests. And when that book deal comes in, how to navigate contracts, advances, developmental edits, marketing, book launches, reading tours, book clubs, film and TV options, the post-publication emotional ups and downs, starting that second book in the academic market, even how to prep for interviews like this one. In the words of Rebecca Mackay, with humor and wisdom and the input of writers from across the literary firmament, Courtney Malm has assembled the go-to book for those looking to publish seriously and make a sustainable career of writing. I wish I could turn this book into a serum and inject it straight into my students' veins. I'll have to settle for now for imploring them to read this book. Courtney Malm, thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here with you in Portland.
Courtney, first, are there any plans to turn your book into a serum?
Yes, of course, and a perfume, actually, yes, and a nail polish.
And you have an agent that will get you those
subsidiaries. I have multiple agents for those subsidiaries.
Oh, yeah. Now, your book is unique in that it covers the whole process of writing and publishing a book. You initially got the idea after publishing and promoting your first novel that was called I'm Having So Much Fun Here Without You.
That's right.
In the introduction for this book, you write that you came out of that a shaking, anxious mess. Things didn't go exactly as you expected. So this is the book you say you needed at the time, but it just didn't exist.
I needed it at the time. I also needed it for my second novel, and it still didn't exist. So I'd say I got the seed for the idea with my first book. And then by the time I toured again for my second book, I thought, wow, you know, the reason that things didn't go as expected is because I had no idea what to expect. We're sort of educated as writers to want a book deal, to think of that as sort of our ultimate goal, huge milestone, right? But then when your dream comes true and you get it, well, then there's nothing. You know, the MFA program, or, you know, whatever, maybe you're in a workshop or something. There aren't really classes you can go to prepare you for what life is like as a published author. There's just nothing. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, depends how you see it, we're not really getting information from our publishers either. It's quite opaque. So I wanted to write this book because it didn't exist, and I think it deserved to.
Yeah, and there's so much valuable information in the book. There's no substitute, of course, for picking up a copy and
reading. Or multiple copies, really.
Right. Let yourself go. But let's at least cover a few questions many new writers ask.
Yeah.
First, you mentioned the MFA program. Mm-hmm. Do I need an MFA?
My answer to you would be, can someone else pay for it? You know, do you have an outside stream of income? Are you independently wealthy? And I'm not making light of this. I really think that the MFA question, and I should say that I do not have an MFA. I never pursued getting one. I really think it comes down to whether or not you can go without income for 2 years. And also, can you go without income again for maybe 2 years after the MFA? Because ultimately, the MFA is preparing you to teach, and the academic market is really restricted right now.
And they don't tell you that in a lot of MFA
programs. They don't tell you that.
Programs.
I think it's a really big disservice because people have no idea. They think they're going to get, I'm generalizing, but still, a lot of people truly believe that they're going to come out of the MFA program with some hefty book deal, because we only hear about the seven figures and the six figures, so everyone thinks that's what's happening. You're going to walk out of there with your six-figure book deal and walk right into tenure. Well, no, you're going to have 3 or 4 years of adjuncting for maybe $18,000 a year, and you're going to move back in with your parents. So if you don't have to do all of that because those same parents or other caretakers or a partner or, you know, a trust fund, whatever the heck it is helping you through the program, well, sure, heck, go. But I really advise people to start off, before you thrust yourself into an MFA program, consider investing in a summer writers conference. We're here in Portland.
Or Winter's Conference.
Or Winter. Come quickly because we're leaving in about 5 hours for the Tin House Winter Workshop. No, but, you know, Tin House, Sewanee, Breadloaf, these programs are amazing. They're not easy to get into, and they're certainly not cheap. But if you really work hard and take it seriously, in 5 days, I mean, you can meet the teachers, the likes of which you could only hope to study with at an MFA program, and the quality of your colleagues' writing is going to be elevated as well. So try that out, because honestly, a lot, you might not like the writing workshop experience, and better to know that in 5 days than to have to live through it for 2 years, right?
Right. Now, another question. I know you've been asked in interviews and on your book tour, do I need an agent, especially given the current ease of self-publishing? And maybe ease is not the exact right word there.
Well, I mean, it's easy to publish now. Whether it's not easy to get books to readers, right? Whether or not you need an agent, first and foremost, depends on whether or not you want to publish traditionally, right, with a traditional house. It's true that there's some micro presses out there who actually don't want agent submissions. So you can work with a micro press, maybe sometimes an independent press, but, you know, a house like Tin House, they are going to be expecting to hear from agents. If you're self-publishing, I mean, that's different. You don't need an agent. What you need is an independent, you know, publicist or marketing expert. But I'm pro-agent. I'm on my third. We don't always sign with the right agent right away. But agents, if you have a good agent, they should be helping you see the arc of your career over time and working really hard, not just for the book that you have sent to them in hopes that they're going to sell it, but also your second book and your third, and then when you pivot and write a memoir and your fourth book, you know, and onward and onward. And also hopefully are giving you ideas of other ways that you can develop your career. Maybe they're pointing you towards speaking engagements or encouraging you to try to write a screenplay or something. I mean, there's some pretty out-of-the-box thinking agents out there, and they're great and they're talented, and we need all the help we can get in this restricted market. So I'm pro-agent, yeah.
I've heard you use the word pit bull.
About my beloved agent?
You don't want somebody that's just kind of agreeable and your friend.
Right.
You want somebody who kind of fight for you, especially in negotiations.
I mean, listen, it depends on the kind of person you are. And certainly us writers, we have so much rejection come our way. So it's nice to think of an agent who every time you talk to them say, oh, this is so great. I love it. It's just perfect. But that can never be true, you know? And ultimately, if your agent's not pushing you to deliver your best work, well, then that makes me nervous that they might be selling sort of a shoddy manuscript to an editor who's so pressed for time that they, even though they realize it's bloated by 30,000 words, they don't have the time to cut it. So they just publish it like that. And then you don't get the reviews, you know, that you're meant to get. People don't respond to it in the way you'd hope. So my agent makes me work like a freaking Olympian. I mean, she makes me work so hard. But I really think, I truly believe that my books are very tight, you know, and the fat has been cut from it. And that's obviously thanks to the wonderful editors I've had, but it does start with Rebecca.
Now, here's another issue writers ask about, the importance of a social media platform. What was interesting to me as I listened to your New York Times Book Review podcast, and you said something kind of the opposite of what I would have expected. You know, writers generally like to write. They might be a little bit introverted. They're not all that open to social media, or they don't take to it too easily. But you said a lot of the beginning writers you work with maybe emphasize that a little too much. Even before they've got something down on paper, they're working on their brand. They're promoting a book that doesn't exist yet.
Oh, sure. They're buying up domains. I mean, but this is indicative of the new game of publishing, where a tremendous pressure is put on would-be writers or writers, you know, to have a platform and develop their brand before they've even learned how to write or even developed a voice. And unfortunately, a lot of young writers out there are not only convinced, but they're being told by agents in the feedback that they're getting, especially nonfiction writers. Oh, come back to me when you have, you know, 30,000 followers, or come back to me when you've written a viral essay that's up to your platform and, you know, you've got blue check verified, and come back. And Fine. I mean, I get it. That's one path towards potentially guaranteeing that there's readers for a project. But ultimately, how far can you go if you haven't even taken the time to develop your voice and learn how to edit yourself? I mean, to me, that's essential. And I am shocked because I work privately with a lot of writers, and the cart is like 90 miles in front of the horse. You know, they're asking me questions about how they think that they should be branded, what their genre is, and they have two chapters of the manuscript, you know? And again, I'm not trying to make fun, because this really reflects a movement of the fulcrum, I think, or rather the focus of attention has changed. And I hope it comes back, you know, because ultimately we're seeing that some of these houses are betting big on influencers, and then shocker, they can't turn in their books.
Yes,
because they don't know how to write.
You see that success of influencers who may not be all that talented, but they have a lot of followers, and that seems to
and it takes listen products. It takes a talent to be, you know, a hot commodity online. Not everyone can do. I mean, I write tweets sometimes. I think they're hysterical, and they're just nobody likes them. But it also takes a talent to write an entire draft, a book-length draft, realize what's wrong with it, revise it again. That takes patience, and I don't know that patience is bred on the internet, right?
Now, the book also gives some very real advice on what to expect in terms of getting paid, and there's actually a section in there
expect
called
nothing.
Well, I've talked to many writers at KABU, and some of them have emphasized that you won't get rich writing and maybe not even make a living solely from writing books. In an interview with the Chicago Review of Books, you discussed that section that I mentioned, getting paid. You said, this is an industry where upward mobility cannot be counted on ever. Do you find that somewhat of a myth among newer writers? And what are more realistic expectations?
You know, I do think it's a myth, and it's an important one to dispel. There was a viral essay that came out on Medium, had a title something like How to Lose, you know, $500,000 quickly from your book. Just someone who spent her book deal sort of wildly. Why did she do that? Because she thought, I got this amount for this book deal, so my next book will get more, and my third book will get more, right? And most people think that. They think, this is okay, I got $25,000 for my first book, I bet I get 50 or 60 for the second, and upward we go. But what's not explained to you is that the book advances that you get after your first book, if you're even lucky enough that your house still wants to work with you, well, they're predicated actually on the performance of your first book. And if it didn't do very well, well, then this is sort of a failed investment. So they're going to say, apparently we took a risk on you, so we're going to lower your next advance by 70% or whatnot. Now, there's a lot of examples of your publisher really likes you. Your book came out, like I had my second novel came out in the summer of 2016, and fiction was down 45%. You know, Trump had recently been, I'm throwing up quotation marks, elected. And my agent kept saying, like, don't worry, everyone's going to write this year off, you know, but still I knew, okay, well, my next book advance is going to be less. The book just didn't perform that the way they thought it would. So you could earn a lot more, you know, you could be one of these stories of someone who started with a micro press and then their book took off, and then they're swept up by one of the big houses, and wow, they get like 95% more than they, or you got a $1 million book deal out the gate, only 3,000 copies sold, and your house drops you. That is a possibility.
And you mentioned in the book the difficulty of that second book, totally. But there's also some exceptions where the second book may have not have done well, like Anthony Doerr, in fact, is a contributor to the book in terms of giving writers advice.
He's a wonderful example.
And his third book was All the Light We Cannot See, which was the big hit for
him. Did fairly well.
It did
Yeah, and of course, you know, this is sort of indicative of our culture. A lot of people think that's his debut. They speak to him as if that's his debut. Same thing with Chloe Benjamin and The Immortalists, or even Emma Straub and The Vacationers. People assume that the book that did the best is the debut. And I talk about this in the book. This was a hoot. At my own town library, they had invited Simon Winchester, you know, really a very famous nonfiction writer. And he got up to speak, and the person making the introduction said, we're so happy to have here, you know, the wonder kid behind Professor and the Madman, his debut. And he got up and he said, oh, oh, the 9 other books disappeared so quickly. Oh, boy.
Building a career.
Right, right.
So upward mobility in his case, but it took a while.
Yeah. I mean...
your book's a comprehensive guide that reflects the reality of the writing business rather than typical expectations. Were you concerned with providing that information in a way that encourages writers without demoralizing them? You know, you won't get rich and you're going to struggle and it's going to be hard to write the second
book.
Better
demoralize them now than have them have their hopes up and they work on a book for 10 years. And for various reasons, it just doesn't sell. I mean, my goal is to explain to people, this is not easy. It's not going to be easy. And if you need a book out right now, you should self-publish it. And then that's okay. Not everyone needs to have a book published in the traditional manner, nor should they. As much as it is a privilege, it leaves you very raw, very vulnerable. And some people... do very poorly with the level of public scrutiny that comes from being a published author. You know, mentally poorly, like they become ill. It's not for everyone. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try. But I just think it's such an opaque business. Like I said, you literally get the book deal. They give you your deadline. Of course, there's lots of things you're doing, copy edits and whatnot. But I promise you, the day you go, you know, for your first event, you are alone from there. I mean, you just don't. No.
And that was your experience, too.
That was totally my experience, and I was really lucky. I had a great book deal. I had an awesome editor, fantastic publicist, super supportive house behind me, great prep, the whole thing. And so that, you know, I was thinking, gosh, if I feel like this, and I'm a white woman, right? Like, if I feel like this, I can't imagine what it's like for other people, so I'm going to ask them about it, you know, and that's why I talked to almost 200 people for the book.
Yeah, I counted. In the back of the book, you list the names of the authors and also publishing professionals that you talk with. I counted 196
The
acknowledgement section. Yeah. So almost 200.
And those are the names. Those are the ones that made it in.
I didn't realize there was.
I'm sorry. So not everyone did make it in.
But you had Anthony Doerr in there. Yeah. We mentioned Roxane Gay, Garth Greenwell, Jonathan Lethem, R.O. Kwan, Donna Tartt, Karen Russell.
Well, Donna Tartt. I did not speak to. If I could be so lucky. I mean, she. I have like pulled a quote from her,
okay.
like that. I just want.
Oh, she was just in that list.
You should still read the book, dear listeners. You should still read the book. But I did not have an interview with Donna. The others, yes.
Now, Courtney, we should mention that you'll be talking about before and after the book deal at Powell's, the downtown location, at 7:30 tomorrow, Tuesday, February 25th at 7:30. And you'll be in conversation with one of my favorite writers and cable guests, Kimberly King Parsons. You'll also be covering your latest novel, Costa Alegre, which came out last summer.
That's right. Yeah, in July with Tin House. I'm so excited to be able to talk about both of them.
Well, it's going to be quite an event. Again, thanks for coming in and joining us at K1. I'm sorry about that awful Lyft ride.
Oh, dear. Oh, let it be a thing of the past. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Courtney Maugham, author of Before and After the Book Deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book, out now from Catapult Press. Courtney will be appearing at Powell City of Books tomorrow, Tuesday, February 25th at 7:30, in conversation with Kimberly King Parsons. You can find out more on CourtneyMaugham.com. This is Ken Jones for KBOOS News In Depth.